My first guest today had a distinguished career in firefighting before becoming a farmer, so she knows more than many of us how a changing climate can play havoc with our lives and our livelihoods. Vivian Thompson has been a rural firefighter for more than 25 years, and back in 2004, Vivian received the Australian Fire Service Medal, and she was the first woman in the ACT to do so. She's also been an incident controller during the 2002-2003 ACT fires and saw things on the fire ground which she had never seen before, and can remember the day at the end of a fire hose that she started to believe in the impact of climate change. As we all steel ourselves for another summer in what looks to be another record-breaking year for global temperatures, Vivian Thompson is suggesting all of us need to take another look at how we plan and prepare for what lies ahead. And Vivian, welcome to RN Afternoons.
Thank you, Michael.
Good to have you along. Vivian, let's take you back, if I can, to that moment in your firefighting career when you started to believe climate change may be influencing fire behaviour.
Yeah, absolutely. I still remember it clear as a bell to this day. And it was in November 2002. So it was a bit earlier in the season. So we were just ramping up for that year. And I got responded to a fire. And when I got to that fire, there was things happening on that fire ground that I'd never really seen happen before, where the fire was actually skipping along the ground, things in way in front were igniting, and this is a very small fire. It wasn't a very big fire at all. In fact, it was probably only about half an acre, if that.
Right.
So it was really, I started to see things there that I'd never seen before. And then, of course, the lead up to that then was into 2003 with the big fire that burnt through the ACT. And again, there I seen other things that I'd never witnessed before on the fire ground. It's stuff that was never covered in our training or people had never talked about, because at that stage I think I'd been fighting fires for over 15, 16 years. So, you know, it really started to make me realise there's something there that we're not getting, there's something there that we're not measuring, or there's more to it than what we are. Understanding was.
Just give people a sense of what it was you witnessed on those days around the ACT fires particularly that made you think, I've never seen this before in my life.
I think one of the easiest things to explain to people, I was in some paddocks, and normally when you have a crown fire, it's supported by a very intense surface fire. So you have to have a fire burning along the ground to basically support a fire actually burning in the top of the trees.
Right.
On that day, on the 18th of January, I actually seen trees igniting that were 100 metres apart with no surface fire whatsoever.
So you're saying the crowns of the trees, the tops of the trees, were bursting into flame, and they were 100 metres apart, and there was no connecting fire between the two trees on the ground?
That's right. We were surrounded by fire, you know, anywhere between 200, 300 a kilometre away. But it was actually in this paddock that didn't have much surface fire at all, because there was really nothing to burn, that it actually was skipping between the treetops, and I'd never really witnessed anything like that before.
And Vivian, in 2002, 2003, when that was happening in the ACT, how many years had you been working in firefighting?
I started firefighting in 1987, so about 16 years.
And in fact, what you've just reported to us anecdotally, but also as a professional firefighter, may I add, who's won the Fire Services Medal, accords with some of the scientific research that's come out around the world when it comes to bushfire behaviour. And Australia is a case in point, no matter where you may be living. And that is, a changing climate has influenced, at least to some degree, the not only the frequency of fires, but also the intensity of fires, to the point where I've been reading, in fact, there's something called almost a super fire, where it starts to create its own climate above the fire.
Yeah, it does. And I think 2003 was a bit of a catalyst for that. There were quite a few technical papers that came out after that from CSIRO, Bureau of Meteorology, all these sorts of organisations, that started to actually look at the atmospheric conditions involved in those fires. I won't go into it much more than that because it does get extremely technical and it's hard to explain unless you've got a background knowledge. But needless to say, after that, when I was speaking to a lot of the researchers and I was saying, you know, it wasn't just me, it was lots of other experienced firefighters as well, talking about what we'd witnessed, they then went back and started looking at a lot of different things. I mean, we watched some areas burn three times. You expect when a fire goes through, it doesn't come back. But I know on my partner's farm, he watched paddocks burn three different times from three different directions. So there has to be more to it. And I think that's when a lot of the research started, because we were starting to witness these phenomenons on the fire ground that, you know, if they had happened in the past, no one had ever talked about them. But for a lot of us involved in 2003, it was very, very obvious there was something different there that was starting to occur. And I've had, you know, I mean, I'm nearly 30 years as a firefighter now, and it's not getting any easier. It's actually getting harder. Our seasons are getting longer. Our intensity is getting higher in a shorter time frame. So there's definitely things that are changing.
Well, as a case in point, you've now moved on since those years to being a landholder, a farmer yourself with your partner, and you run a property now about roughly halfway between Cootamundra and Gundagai in New South Wales. And you were telling me earlier that only yesterday the New South Wales Rural Fire Service issued a warning.
Yeah, they did. Look, there's a lot of we're right up the northern end of the Riverina area, and they were actually out on the radio actively asking people to stop harvesting because the fire conditions were such that they stood a good chance of starting a fire. And they actually have prepared like a document now to actually help people that are out there harvesting, because a person working in a harvest is not necessarily a firefighter either. So they've created these documents now that I noticed yesterday. I haven't read them yet, I must say, I haven't had time, but to actually help them make those decisions about whether their harvesting is actually putting the land and the crops and everything else at risk. So I thought that was a great thing to do.
But is it usual, if you look back over seasons of harvest, I know you've been involved with the land, as your partner has, for some time now. Is it usual that on November the 21st, a New South Wales Fire Service warning would come out to say, please don't think about harvesting today if you can, because you may pose a fire risk?
Look, our harvesting generally around my area doesn't even start till about the second week of December, and we usually wrapped up by Christmas, unless the season's a little bit late. But this year it's sort of... it's coming really hard and really fast, which I find really interesting because we've had such a wet winter. And when I was discussing this with my partner yesterday, Robert, he said, Vivian, the interesting thing is that the lower areas are wet, but the ridge tops are really dry. So he, you know, we believe so we'll get fires up on the ridge lines, but on those lower areas, they're still quite wet. But at the same time, you go a little bit south of us and they've had the same sort of rain, they've got a fire risk. So it's just, to me, there's no normality anymore.
My guest is Vivian Thompson. She has been a rural firefighter now for more than 30 years. Back in 2004, she received the Australian Fire Services Medal, which is one of the great recognitions you can receive in any part of the firefighting industry or sector within this country. She was the first woman in the ACT to do so. She was also incident controller during the 2002-2003 ACT fires, which were devastating in the impact on not only lives, but property, and also about the way we viewed our behaviour around fires. Now, if you're listening to this conversation with Vivian thinking, well, I live in a city, so this really doesn't apply to me, maybe it's time to think again about that. Because Vivian, I think, as we were discussing earlier, so much of the city now interfaces with what used to be just virgin bush. And we need to start, from your point of view, I think you say, thinking about what's called PPPR. Do you want to explain that?
Yeah, PPRR is quite a recognised term in the emergency management disaster areas, and basically what it talks about is prevention, preparedness, response and recovery. Now, predominantly my line of work has been in response, and that's where you actually respond to the incident, whether it be a fire or a flood or whatever. But in the last 20 years, we've tried really hard to move more to prevention, and that can be as simple as building a wall to prevent a flood from flooding an area. Right. And preparedness in terms of doing your risk management assessments and all that sort of stuff. And then recovery. Because the fires are becoming more and more extreme and more devastating, the recovery process is also blowing out. And it's not just recovery on the physical aspect, it's actually recovery on the emotional and the community aspect as well, which is a really biggie that has devastating effects as well.
Okay, so let's just go through those again. I think I got them wrong. So PPRR, is that how
yep,
it is?
Yep, prevention, preparedness, response and recovery.
And when you apply what you've learned as a professional rural firefighter to the act of being a farmer, are you able to go through the entire PPRR in your life every day?
If you had have asked me that about 5 years ago or even 10 years ago, I probably would have said yes.
Right.
I would have to change my mind now for a couple of different reasons. Like my partner's also a very, very experienced firefighter as I am. I think between us, we've probably got about, probably 60, 70 years experience. There was a day in January a couple of years ago, and both of us just looked at each other and thought, well, if we get a fire today, we walk. Because we honestly felt through our experience base, if we had a fire on the farm, that we had no possible chance of being able to do anything. So all we could do was do a bit of preparedness, like moving the stock into low fuel areas or into the sheep yards, areas like that where they're going to be protected. But basically in terms of us being able to do anything, we honestly thought we'd walk away. But, you know, having said that, over the weekend, I probably spent about 6 hours on the ride-on lawnmower just mowing around the house to try and get that grass down. So that's something as simple that you can do in terms of your preparedness. The response is something that's probably the hardest part of everything, because on really bad fire days, that waiting is probably the hardest thing, especially if you've got a column of smoke 30, 40, 50 kilometres in the distance, because you know it's just a waiting game to see what the weather's going to do. And of course, the recovery is just always such a long process. But prevention, I don't think we do enough of. And prevention is where you can actually remove the risk.
Are you talking here not only about the ways we can clean up around our own home, but also hazard reduction burning?
Oh, absolutely. Hazard reduction burning is a big part of it. But it's a sort of double-edged sword, though, because with the climate change and our windows of opportunity, because when you do hazard reduction burning, you have to do it in a certain window. The conditions have to be right for you to do that. So it actually burns well enough to get rid of the fuel. And then it doesn't burn too hot that you're actually creating a bigger danger in the future, you know. So your window of opportunity we're finding is getting smaller and smaller. And especially since we had such a wet winter as well, that opportunity pretty much was, you know, non-existent. So hazard reduction is a huge part of it, absolutely, but it has to be done right.
Vivian, it sounds to me like we could be facing some extraordinary conditions, just to wind this up, because as you say, it's been some big rains and in some cases drought-breaking rains in part of the nation.
Yes.
That have meant that we've got a big fuel load, which dries out when? Does it dry out now or does it dry out by December? When does it dry out?
Well, it depends on what species you got. It depends on the grasses. It depends on your environment, your slope. It depends on so many different things. But I can talk about our local farm. Our local farm, we do a lot of haymaking. So our crops are all being cut at the moment to make hay. So my 17-year-old son is madly working on the tractor at home at the moment while my partner and I are in Sydney. And that will reduce the risk to a certain extent. If native grasses are always really good to be incorporated in the farm, because they actually actively grow through the summer. So they're actually green and they're growing. Whereas a lot of the annual species that were imported into this country will start growing at the beginning of spring. They'll grow up, they'll set seed, and then they die off. So you end up with a lot of
dry fuel.
That's right. Yeah. So, and it depends on the weather, it depends on the temperature, the wind, so many different things. But the idea, I guess, from a farm perspective is to having that mix on your farm, you know, across your whole farm. So we've got areas which we promote native grasses, we have other areas where we're cropping, and we have other areas that are pasture-based that, you know, are put in strategic areas where we can use them not just for feed but also sometimes as a buffer zone as well.
Look, hopefully, Vivian, these words of wisdom from you will get people thinking differently about what they need to do now to prepare for summer, because so much of us think summer officially begins on the first day of December. And it sounds to me, as someone who's lived on the land, worked with the land, both as farmer and firefighter, we're seeing summer start way earlier every year now. And that, again, I guess, is a symptom of a changing climate. So thank you so much indeed for taking the time today. It's been really great.
Thank you.
Vivienne Thompson, who, along with her partner, now farms between Cootamundra and Gundagai, and for 30 years, as I mentioned, has been a firefighting professional in the rural services. She's won the Fire Services Medal, amongst many other awards to her name. She's been on the board of Women in Agriculture as well. And she has written a book about her time overseeing the ACT fires back in 2003-2002, called Ashes of the Firefighters. It's a very raw and graphic account of the long-term stress and trauma of firefighting. I'll put some details up online on RN Afternoons a bit later. You may have some ideas about how you're preparing as well as we talk about this on RN Afternoons.